While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Tuesday, the 31st of March, 2026. Now, as we reach the end of the month and steadily move further into the year, this is a moment not only for reflection, but also for forward-looking conversations about where Namibia is heading. Now, much has been marked by important developments across the economic, governance, and social landscape, developments that continue to shape the national agenda and influence the everyday lives of Namibians. Now, this afternoon, we once again turn our attention to the key issues driving the country's conversation, that is from economic trends and policy direction to innovation, business growth, and youth empowerment. Now, these are not just headlines. They are indicators of progress, challenges, and opportunities in a rapidly evolving environment. On the Radio News Analysis remains more than just news update. It is a platform for deeper understanding where we go beyond the surface to unpack the decisions, the data, and the dynamics behind the stories, helping you make sense of what they mean for Namibia today and in the months ahead. Over the next 90 minutes, we will break down the major stories shaping the end of March, connect the dots between policy and impact, and engage with perspectives on perspectives that matter. Now, as the year gains momentum, staying informed and understanding context becomes increasingly important. So wherever you're listening from across Namibia's towns, cities, and communities, thank you for making us part of your afternoon. This right here is On the Reading News Analysis, not just reporting the news, but helping you to understand it. Let's get right into today's top stories. The Bank of Namibia says it has achieved 98% of its strategic targets. Now, the governor of the Bank of Namibia, Benson Wanguta, has announced that the central bank has successfully achieved 98% or 97.6, running off to 98% of its strategic objectives during the 2025 financial year. Now, speaking at the launch of the 2025 annual report, Wanguta described the bank's performance as exceptionally strong, highlighting progress in key areas such as monetary policy implementation, financial stability oversight, and improvements in payment systems in infrastructure. Payment system infrastructure. Now, as a result of this performance, the central bank says it will pay a dividend of $200 million to the Namibian government, reflecting its solid financial position and operational efficiency. Wanguta noted, however, that despite those gains, Namibia's economy remains structurally vulnerable due to its continued reliance on the mining sector. Now, the sector, which is a major contributor to export earnings and GDP, exposes the country to external shocks such as fluctuations in global commodity prices. He emphasized the need for economic diversification to strengthen resilience, pointing to sectors such as agriculture, tourism, and manufacturing as potential growth drivers. Now, looking ahead, the Bank of Namibia projects a moderate economic recovery. Growth is expected to range between 2.6% and 3% during 2026 and 2027, supported by improved global conditions, domestic investment, and gradual recovery in key industries. Now, the central bank reiterated its commitment to maintaining price stability, safeguarding the financial system, and supporting sustainable economic development in Namibia. Let's now take a listen to Governor of the Bank of Namibia, that is Mr. Benson Wanguta.
On the fiscal front, we see the budget deficit for the year 2025-2026 has come out to be 6.6% of GDP, slightly higher than what was projected earlier in 2025 in the midterm. when it was at 5.9%. The reason simply for the widening of the deficit, although the ministry has really done its best in terms of trying to contain expenditure, is that the revenue has come much lower than what was projected. The total debt as a percentage of GDP in 2025, end of December, it stood at 64%. The external sector remain relatively weak, but the level of international reserves remain very much adequate. In 2025, external sector was weaker as foreign reserves declined, despite the current account deficit narrowing. Despite the decline in the reserves, they remain quite adequate to sustain the currency peg and also to be able to meet the foreign financial obligation. But I must point out, despite the level of reserves where we are, which is just slightly above the 3 months of import cover, which is an international benchmark, one should also look at the balance sheet of the country overall, which is represented in our annual report by the international investment position. You could clearly see that our international investment position improved quite dramatically. The net position now is standing at around 23 billion in 2025 compared to 14.9 billion that we have seen in 2024. Overall, it shows that our balance sheet as a country and our external position as a country is quite healthy. And at any point in time, we should be able to honor our financial obligation. In fact, if you look at the balance sheet, it presents you with your assets and liability vis-a-vis the foreign nations. It shows that we are a net lender to other nations than being a net borrower. That shows, although our current account position is weaker, overall, we stand in a very good position. In terms of financial stability and macroprudential, which is our key responsibility, Namibia's financial system remains stable and resilient despite uncertain macroeconomic environment. The banking sector remains profitable, is liquid, and is well capitalized. The non-bank financial institution maintains its resilience as well and its steadiness, and it continues to expand. The payment system, which is our core, there is no system, there is no payment or transaction that will be passed into the country without the payment system, remain efficient and effective. And if you look at its downtime, it's very minimal. In terms of one of our core mandates, ensuring that the bank institutions are sound, I can show you by looking at the capital adequacy ratio of all the banks that are standing at 17.3%, much higher than the regulatory requirement of around 12%. Now, in any institution, you should also look at the profitability, how that industry is doing. You look at the return on assets, it's standing at 2.5%. Return on equity, 19.6%. That's quite a healthy position. The liquidity risk, the prudential requirement dictates that at least liquidity should be above 85%. You could clearly see our indicators, the net stable funding ratio at 116.5, the liquidity coverage ratio at 145.6%, much higher than the 85 that is dictated by the law. The asset quality have also improved quite dramatically in 2025 to 4.3% from 5.6% that we have seen in 2024. Banking sector overall, if you look at the balance sheet, of the banking sector, it's standing at 188 billion of all its assets. The composition of loan and advances, again, that is a split. How loans and advances that are advanced by the commercial banks are split in those different accounts. Financial performance. We need to recognize that we have been operating in an environment that was very volatile, where interest rate has even come down quite significantly. And also our balances or our assets have also come down due to a few developments. One, SACU receipts is one of those components that define our balances that we are holding in terms of our foreign reserves, has come down quite significantly in 2025 compared to 2024. There has been a huge outflow as well in terms of rand reserves out of the country. And then thirdly, we have seen also the Eurobond redemption. Now, in that regard, interest rate income that was realized by the bank came down from 1.2 billion that was realized in 2024 to 963 million in 2025. So when your interest income is down, obviously it will affect your bottom line. Operating expenses, I must emphasize that there are a number of initiatives that we have undertaken. We are running instant payment. There are also other activities that we are doing. And we are doing all this in promoting the financial sector development and also ensuring that the mandate for which we have been created for are not left unattended. I always emphasize that the central bank, we are not a profit-making entity. First and foremost, we need to deliver on our mandate. And realizing a profit is a bonus. And that's why the operating expenses there clearly has slightly gone up by 15% from 741 million in 2024 to 849 million in 2025. That now leaves us with a distributable amount dropping for the year 2025 from 1.1 billion to 553. And what we are distributing in terms of the formula to the state, which is of interest to the public, is a 200 million that we have given to the state. Theme chapter. For those who are in academia, for the students, for the policy makers, that's a very interesting piece of work that you need to take it up. The country is running a twin deficit. Now, when we are talking about twin deficit, we are talking about a deficit from the fiscal budget deficit and also current account deficit. If you look into that study, they also went further trying to establish which channel has really been stronger. Is it the typical Keynesian, where they assume that when you run a huge budget deficit, then it affects the current account because that money flows out through import, and then it exacerbates the current account deficit? Or is it what they call is a Ricardo equivalency hypothesis, which is basically the contrast of the Keynesian. The Ricardian equivalency hypothesis, essentially they assume that you have got, even if government is running a budget deficit, the household is rational enough to anticipate future taxes that will be raised. And when that happens, they will start saving. But that works in a perfect capital market. So for those who are in academia, please take that as one of your study, and then you can give us some kind of key policy recommendations on how we can resolve the issue of the twin deficit. But overall, in terms of the conclusion of that study, it shows that although we have got a twin deficit, it should not be viewed as a problem, because the current account deficit that we have seen now is not really being led strongly by consumptive behavior, but is more on the developmental aspects in terms of oil and gas, which we think that once we start seeing the first oil or the mining activities they start producing, definitely the deficit will be minimized through the increase in export. So policy recommendations that are emanating from that the theme chapter: prudent public spending and improved revenue collection is key to be able to minimize the twin deficit. We need to improve the public sector efficiency as well through the e-services, the digital public infrastructure, of which the bank is also playing a key role, will help in that respect. Potential for import substitution to improve trade balance, it is an area that we need to explore, and also to promote the local value addition to boost the manufacturing sector. What are some of the key takeaways that we need to think about? One key takeaway, for those who are in the media, you can write that the bank have executed on its strategy very well. Then another takeaway, although you are going to say that this one is much lower than the previous year, the point is that the bank has declared a 200 million dividend to government. 200 million, one is not really taking it by its face value, because it's going to help to buy medicine, to contribute towards building a clinic, to contribute towards building a hospital somewhere. So these are not just numbers, but we are talking about something that improves the livelihood of the people. Finally, the bank maintained price stability and financial stability as highlighted by the key indicators, because this is one of our...
Welcome back. Now, of course, we are back to discuss further on this, that the Bank of Namibia has announced, one, the $200 million dividend that they are giving to the government of Namibia. And of course, it's 98% strategic objectives that the central bank says it has achieved during the 2025 financial year. Now, joining me to break this down is economist Peter France. Good afternoon, Peter France. Welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Habib. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Of course, always a pleasure to engage you, France. Of course, France, we're talking about the Bank of Namibia achieving, it says that it has achieved 98% of its strategic objectives. And I don't know, perhaps for those who like to scrutinize things a little bit more, and perhaps for economists, the question remains to see, is that possible for the Bank of Namibia to announce, to see it has achieved 98% of its strategic objectives when the economy is still quite lagging behind and inequality persists?
Yeah, I don't understand now why they mean by 98% strategy achieved, because what have they used to measure the work that has carried out, or which measurements have they put in place just so that they ensure that 98% was indeed successful and covered? Because so far we also have a problem of where we have the lowest economic growth in a while, which also brings the question of what was really achieved or covered in this 98%. Is it just the implementation, or was it the real work itself? Because by the look of things, it's just maybe the implementation, their objectives, but which work actually shows that they have indeed carried out this much, that they've benefited or felt by everyone in the country? Because at this point, it just feels like maybe an organizational objective, which is nothing to do with the whole economy at large.
That's also what I'm also suspecting, that probably just an organizational strategic objectives and not really something that has to do with the economy at large per se. And of course, they do also cite, before we get to that, now the central bank will pay a dividend of 200 million Namibian dollars to the Namibian government. Now, from an economist's perspective, what does this dividend say about the bank's financial health?
Also on top of that, we're supposed to know now the difference. Was it the highest in all those years, or is it the lowest? Or is it
not the highest? Something? Definitely not the highest, because I did hear him mention that it's lower than the previous year's ones. Mm. So
we must now also see that if it's not the highest, how is it the central bank have achieved 98% of its objective? If we are sitting with an amount lower than the previous financial year. So these are also things that we have to question in overall when you are measuring the performance of central bank. Also, on top of that, it's like it's a central bank. Does it mean that it's a are they referring to how they have implemented their objectives when it comes to the other players that report directly to them, such as commercial banks, or how? So, in terms of that, I think the 200 million is an increase in government coffers, which also we have a youth project that is now ongoing for now, doesn't have any due date anymore. So I think it will be an advantage to the government. They will have a lot of money in the coffer just to finance other projects, and also to ensure that the goals are met, overall goals of the country, not just for specific departments.
Yeah. Indeed. Of course, we can't shy away from what they spoke about in regards of that despite the gains that the bank has made or the central bank has made, they say Namibia's economy remains structurally vulnerable due to its continued reliance on the mining sector. And now, of course, this calls upon a diversification. But before we get into diversification, let's get into understanding why reliance on the mining sector could be considered a structural risk for Namibia.
Yes, I have to put it in this way. You know, when it comes to mining, let's take an individual mine.
Okay.
When you want to start a mine, let's say gold, you should know that it has just a lifespan. So basically, eventually these resources at that particular place where you're going to mine, they will run out, or they will not be as sustainable as they were at the beginning. So if we are relying on mining itself, eventually when these resources have run out of availabilities, then it becomes a risk to our country. It becomes a risk to also where we will be labeled as we do not achieve the demands of other countries, because they are expecting for these resources to their country, so they also turn into other finished products for resale purposes. So basically, just let's say just the lifespan of the mining overall.
Okay. Now, of course, here comes in diversification diversifying Namibia's economy. What challenges does Namibia face in diversifying its economy? And of course, I want to believe that this diversification into agriculture, tourism, and manufacturing is very important, yes? And perhaps, what would you say is the bank's role, the central bank's role, in really ensuring or making it practical for Namibians to diversify into different economic sectors? Do we need perhaps the central bank to also come up with maybe ways of promoting certain companies, for instance, certain local companies to really diversify? For instance, maybe the 200 dividend could have been structured in such a way that it attends to that. What is your take?
I think for me, I don't think we rely on mining sector. My opinion here is that we export more of mineral resources, which are mined in Namibia, to other countries. I think that's what the governor have approached the situation with, because if you look at agriculture, we are heavily dependent on the agricultural sector. Is it just that we do not export as much as this product to other countries than we export the mining resources? So I think the approach he took is that we export a lot of mineral resources that are in mined here in Namibia, other than exporting other products that we produce in Namibia. Yeah, in when it comes to diversification, if you look at agriculture, you look at the green scheme that you have in the country, you also look at the amount of products that are being sold on the street at a cheaper price. It's basically a thing of we don't have market for our own product. If you are seeing people selling a huge watermelon for $60 or $50 at a Tunda irrigation, why is this the same watermelon that you buy a quarter of it for the same price as the whole at the Tunda? So it's a thing of finding a market for the Namibian product, especially when it comes to agriculture. And also, I think also in my own view, I also see a lot of manufacturing products. I think the manufacturing industry also growing. And yeah, I think also the fishing industry is also there. I'm guessing it's just the approach that the governor took, but overall, there is diversification when it comes to the production of this products in Namibia.
Okay. Now, Namibia is expected, is projected to, with a growth rate of 2.6% to 3%. Is this perhaps considered strong for Namibia? And also, on that same aspect, how do global economic conditions influence Namibia's growth prospects?
So, when we are measuring the economic growth or GDP, we include foreign products that are produced in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So if these foreign products are being produced in Namibia, in the end, if we are to calculate the national GDP, the national gross domestic product, it goes to other countries. So I think it's a thing of we have to, let's also try to subtract the products that are produced here but for foreign people, because the only thing they contribute is employment and the commercial tax that they pay in Namibia, most likely. What about other benefits, or the equipment, the technical know-how, the ability of teaching our own people to do these things on their own in the country? So we have to look at these things. But overall, when GDP grows, we expect every Namibian person to feel the growth of the country, also to know the benefits that comes with this kind of growth.
Okay. Interesting analysis that right there, Peter Franz. Okay, I think at this point I would say any questions that I didn't tackle or didn't ask you that you think we didn't tackle that you would want add as a contribution?
Not at this point. I think I would love to dive into 98%
strategic objective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, strategic for the central bank.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Peter Franz, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. Always a pleasure to host you and engage you.
Thank you.
Okay. That's economist Peter Franz, and from his perspective as an economist, he says he thinks we are doing Namibia's economy is diversified. Well, in my opinion, I think it's quite not the case. So to say, we need to still do more in terms of diversification, of course. Or maybe we are the economy is well diversified, but perhaps just not much is coming in through other economies as opposed to the mining sector. Now, of course, let's pause right here. We'll be back to continue this conversation. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite ofoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ujendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. We're still continuing right here on the Reader News Analysis. Now, of course, joining us telephonically is Mr. Romeo Miunda, and he's a spokesperson for the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to on the Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon and good afternoon to the listeners. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Pleasure is all mine. Of course, we're talking about the Bank of Namibia announcing its 98%, achieving its 98% strategic goals. Now, at that same event, they did mention that Namibia is structurally vulnerable, or its economy is vulnerable due to its continued reliance on the mining sector. And of course, the discussion time place to say there's a need to emphasize economic diversification to strengthen resilience, pointing to sectors such as agriculture, of which is your hometown, in tourism and manufacturing. But let's talk about agriculture. From your opinion, do you think Namibia is doing enough, or are we diversified enough in terms of agricultural sector?
Thank you so much. I think first and foremost, just to comment on that assertion of diversification, I want to agree with that. We know for a fact that Namibia is heavily dependent on some few sectors, which is mining, perhaps fisheries, and we need to diversify and move into other sectors such as manufacturing, but also agriculture has been one of them. Agriculture is a very important sector, considering the fact that it contributes to the livelihoods of our people, especially in rural areas. We know at least over 80% of our people, they depend on agriculture for sustaining their livelihoods. But however, when it comes to the commercialization of it, I think we are doing fairly well, but also what we know at the moment is that Namibia is importing most of its food items or essentials from other countries such as South Africa. Yeah. And also the other factor that we know that perhaps is an inhibiting factor is the fact that we are a semi-arid country, and probably the driest country in the sub-Saharan Africa.
Hmm.
So based on that, and that is coupled with the availability or the rain patterns that are inconsistent in Namibia, it makes it difficult for us to move into agriculture and produce the amounts of food that we want to produce. But also having that, I think agriculture should be or is a strategic function. In the AIDS administration of this country, which is currently led by Her Excellency, Dr. Netumbo Ndaitwa,
yeah,
agriculture is one of those priority areas. where in the NDB6 we are committing to reduce that dependency that I've spoken about of in terms of food items from neighboring countries. So we have to look into the interventions that will ensure that we achieve that. And considering our climatic situations, we need to invest more into irrigation schemes so that we are able to not and move away from the dependence of rain-fed agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a need to diversify that component where we're looking into sustainable agricultural practices. So we need people that will go into that component and to look into how do we utilize the small amount of water that we have to grow our food security and production as a country. So I think that is that is one. But also in terms of manufacturing, of value addition, the value chain of agriculture itself is another sector that we need to look into. Are we processing what we are producing?
Yeah.
As a sector? Are we processing? So that value chain addition is something that we need to move into because at the moment we can be producing, but then we are not processing. And that component adds value in terms of employment creation. It adds value in terms of income generation, in terms of contribution to GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to look into those production and processing as well as marketing. But also remember the other element in that value chain is logistics.
Yeah.
The logistical elements. How do you move the proceeds that have been produced
mm-hmm.
through these agricultural activities? That is another value chain that can easily get us money. But I think overall we are doing well in terms of our agronomic production. Of course, we still need to do more. We are doing well in terms of our livestock sector.
Mm-hmm.
We know we are actually producing for marketing and export to other countries. I think Namibia is a prime spot for beef marketing elsewhere in the world. So I think we are doing well, but more still needs to be done in that regard.
Mm, interesting. Now, you spoke about irrigation projects, and of course, we do have some of those within Kavango East, Kavango West. But then we're facing quite high electricity bills. Perhaps shouldn't we also focus on those ones to say let's boost them so that they can increase productivity? And I really do appreciate how you give a thorough education on the different value chains that I think sometimes we tend to overlook, or perhaps I've been overlooking as in terms of when perhaps having some of this discussions. But yeah, in terms of the irrigation projects that are already existing, is there no need to really boost them at this particular point in time so that they can boost more productivity?
Yeah, I think I've somehow touched to that. We are busy. Remember, all of these, or well, most of these green schemes, they fall under the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Some of them have just moved back so that we continue to administer them. Some of them are still under the private partnership program that is part of government. But we are looking at green schemes holistically to contribute to the government objective that I've mentioned earlier, that we need to reduce dependency. So at the moment, we are looking into interventions that will make them productive. to their full potential and capacity. Some of them are affected by production capacities, for example, not capacity, but production cost. You have mentioned things like power, which are basically things that would take most of the money instead of investing in the production itself. You are paying for electricity, and this actually inhibits your production value. So these are things that we are addressing, and these are the things that I've mentioned that people can come into this sector in terms of diversifying the agricultural sector. One can come in and bring in technologies that is friendly to reduce the cost of production, especially in green schemes. These are opportunities that are available out there. I've also mentioned about the water scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
We spend a lot of money in terms of investing into watering and irrigating these produces.
Mm.
But also we know that Namibia is a water scarce country.
Mm. Hold that thought for me. We have a scheduled commercial break coming up, but I want you to still come and continue right there where we're living off.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimi with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Easter's cheaper with extra low prices at Furman Brock. Get 2 kg Tastic rice for $36.99. A 2 litre Coca-Cola for only $21.99. 2 kg Sunlight hand or auto washing powder for $54.99. And 9 Twin Saver 2-ply toilet rolls for only $69.99. Hop on over to vurmanbrock.com to see more Easter bargains at WB. We care.
Okay. Now we are finally back. I know, I hope we didn't take up too much time, Mr. Romeo. You're talking about water scarcity, which is, I know, something we don't dive into often, and about Namibia being an arid country. Mm-hmm. Mr. Romeo?
Yes, thank you so much. As I was saying, mm-hmm. that Namibia is a water scarce country. That is one of the factors that are inhibiting full production so that we reach our food security goals. So in terms of diversification that is being spoken about, I was saying that this is something that the private sector, individuals and members of the public can look into on coming up with or investing in technology that would actually enhance our productivity, but also use the water that we have, the available water that we have in scarcity to the best, so that we do not actually use so much for irrigation purposes. So these are some, like I've mentioned, these are some of the value chains, but also these are some of the interventions that would require us to innovate, so that we are able to diversify into the sector,
yeah.
So that we reach our goals. But agriculture is, like I've mentioned, it is a strategic sector in government at the moment. It remains a priority. It is important for food security. And also maintaining the livelihoods of our people. It is important for employment creation. And on, not only are we speaking about the agronomic, which is the staple crops that we are used to, we must also speak about the livestock industry. I think often also overlooked when people are speaking about agriculture. So the livestock in the industry is equally important in that regard and its contribution to Namibia.
Indeed. Last question, and I know I'm talking to the right person when I ask this question. In terms of the livestock industry, I mean, we, South Africa, not so long ago, and I believe they are still kind of like experiencing the foot and mouth disease. Isn't this the time perhaps for Namibia to come in and step in and grow its market? For instance, on African soil as well as with Europe and the West. Isn't this time maybe to take advantage of that opportunity? Or perhaps we don't meet all those standards at the moment?
Yeah, I think Namibia is, it has a premium. I think we are basically on top when it comes to the meat sector or livestock sector. We have premium markets that we are servicing with our livestock and meat. I must also just say that the livestock value chain at the moment in Namibia is one of the largest employers of about 70% of our people that directly or indirectly benefit from that. About 45,000 jobs are created. That means we have a very good sector. And our markets basically are niche markets that we are having. And we continue to grow in terms of markets. We continue to secure new markets for our meat and livestock. And recently, we have added USA, China, Norway, and some parts of the European Union. So in terms of marketing, I don't think as a country we should be worried. I think what we should be worried about is basically maintaining the health status of Namibia's livestock. As you have spoken up of the emerging threat that is been reported in South Africa as well as Botswana, that emerging threat of foot and mouth, that is something that we should be taking serious as a country, and as government through the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, we are already putting measures in place to ensure first and foremost that we prevent that incursion of the foot and mouth disease to come into Namibia. So you have heard of the control zone that we have established in the Karas region. So this control zone is basically to put in restrictions in terms of movements of livestock and products so that we prevent that the disease from coming in. But also we are looking into restrictions of movements also between Namibia and Botswana. And we have recently concluded an awareness campaign that was basically sensitizing stakeholders as well as farmers into how we can work together so that we prevent first and foremost that incursion of the disease into Namibia. But should it come into Namibia, what are the interventions that we have to put in place? What are the protocols that we need to employ so that we prevent this disease from spreading further, so that we can be able to protect the markets that we have for beef and livestock products?
Indeed. so that we can protect the markets that we already have, the existing ones. Interesting. Mr. Romeo Miunda, thank you so much for making time for us and giving us that educational, informative analysis.
Right. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Pleasure is all mine. Of course, so there you had it from Mr. Romeo Miunda, and he is the spokesperson of the PRO for the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Of course, this is on the Reading News Analysis. 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. Perhaps you've picked up something interesting that he has spoken that you would want to engage further, or perhaps maybe want to address some questions in regards to that. 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. For now, we pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Thereafter, you can expect news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. And now, of course, for economic indicators right here before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off with the US dollar. One US dollar is equal to 17.15 Namibian dollars. And the dollar is picking up certainly against the Namibian dollar. And £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars, 0.68 cents. Meanwhile, one Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.80 cents. Pardon me, 11 Namibian dollars, 0.80 cents. And then we have the United Arab Emirates, a dirham, which is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 67 cents. One Chinese yuan, which is equals to 0.11 Namibian dollars and one Botswana pula. That one is 1 Namibian dollar and 24 cents. Now let's get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. You know, we always start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Let's talk about South Africa recording a modest job growth in the fourth quarter of 2025, whereby their informal sector has risen by 18%. thousand. And I appreciate how they put the figures there as opposed to just percentages, because you can't quite understand the percentage when you don't have the figures. And especially when you're speaking about economies such as that of South Africa, if they had said by 2%, you might feel like that doesn't make any difference. But when a figure specifically is put there, such as 18,000 jobs, then it makes it quite understandable. But let's take a listen to that.
And jobs in the fourth quarter. To this story now, South Africa recorded an uptick in jobs in the fourth quarter of 2025, with total employment in the formal sector rising by 18,000 jobs. This is a 0.2% quarter-on-quarter job increase, a jump from 10,533,000 in September 2025 to 10,551,000 in December 2025. According to Stats SA's quarterly employment statistics, the quarterly gains were driven largely by increase in trade at 1.6% and business services at 0.7%. Full-time employment in the formal sector also increased by 14,000, a 0.1% increase quarter on quarter between September and December 2025.
Total employment increased by 18,000 quarter on quarter from 10,533,000 in September 2025 to 10,551,000 in December 2025. This was due to increase in trade and business services by 87,000 and 17,000 respectively, while electricity remained unchanged. However, there were decreases reported by the following industries: construction 13,000, manufacturing 11,000, community services 5,000, transport 4,000, and mining 3,000.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
13,000, manufacturing 11,000, community services 5,000, transport 4,000, and mining 3,000. Total employment decreased by 102,000 year on year between December 2024 and December 2025. Full-time employment increased by 14,000 quarter on quarter from 9,420,000 in September 2025 to 9,434,000 in December 2025.
Now, the 6th South Africa Investment Conference in Sandton is underway. Let's take a listen to that.
Take you now to my colleague Nompumelelo Siziba, who's standing by to get a sense of the reaction coming from the IDC. Nompumelelo, what's it looking like on your end?
Thanks very much for that, Mpaw. Well, you know, a very important element in all of these discussions are the development finance institutions. We've often heard in recent years that the development finance institutions are going to play a pivotal role in terms of making sure that projects are prepared in a way that it helps to crowd in private sector investment. And with me here, I do have Ms. Lucretia Kumalo. She's Divisional Executive for Client Support and Growth at the Industrial Development Corporation. Thank you, ma'am, for your patience. So one of the things I wanted to really find out from you is there's this 2 trillion rand target for over the next 5 years. What sort of role do you envisage the IDC playing? What sort of sectors are you going to be looking at to help fund and bring private sector players into?
Thank you so much, Nompumelelo, and thank you to the viewers out there. I think it's such a pivotal moment whenever the president hosts this conference. It is an opportunity to sell South Africa as an investment destination. And as the IDC, we do partner with other DFIs all over the world. Recently, the Minister of DTIC announced the partnership that we have with AfriExim Bank. We do already partner with other DFIs such as the IFC, the World Bank, the New Development Bank, just to name but a few. And we do this to crowd in funding from other parties in order to ensure that for the investments that we do, that we're not the only funder around the table. And this assists us with this trillion rand investment that we are requiring for the economy of this country to be able to grow. So we're very excited about the work. We're already doing a lot of work on the ground to prepare the projects. So we do have a list of projects, and we welcome any more projects that the viewers out there might have.
It's common cause that the small, medium enterprise is going to be the one that helps to propel job growth. And often we hear these big numbers bandied around, and it's usually your big firms who have the resources and the capabilities to be able to bid for certain contracts and so on and so forth. So what kind of work are you doing to ensure that SMEs are also included in this arena?
So I just want to say that at the heart of the IDC is focus on SMEs. Many of the large companies that we see today started out as SMEs. The IDC was the one that initiated big corporates like Sasol. So when we look at businesses, we don't think that they're going to end up just being SMEs. We see the growth that they're going to bring into the economy. So we have since started a part of the business called Business Support for Pre-Investment. So we partner with entrepreneurs to help them put together business plans so that those business plans can be scalable. We also have a sister company called CEDFA. Until recently, CEDFA was a sister company of the IDC in the same stable, but now they are working with the Department of Small Business, and we partner very closely with them. So it is at the heart of what we do to work with one projects that we think are scalable. So some businesses really just start as projects, and that's something that the IDC is very much focused on. But we also work on businesses that are currently small and have got big potential to grow, and we partner with them as they grow. And that's why it is our focus to focus on the client and to focus on the growth of those businesses in the economy.
And lastly, and very quickly, what about the issue of having to put skin in the game? That is financial, you know, you need to put something in the game. There might be somebody out there who's got a fantastic idea but doesn't come from the greatest background financially. Do you support those kinds of people?
Yes, we do support those kinds of people. So firstly, within the IDC itself, those could be new projects. And in those projects, the IDC would take some equity stakes as well and put in some equity funding and or any other mezzanine financing that's needed. We also assist them to get funding from other parts of the country. Even outside investors are interested in those projects. But also the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition does have a scheme for black industrialists where they focus on providing this funding, which acts as equity for the investor. So I don't think that if someone has got a great idea, they should be dissuaded or discouraged from approaching us just because they don't have skin in the game. Skin in the game sometimes is your sweat efforts that you have put in to build this idea, and we do recognize that as well.
Very true. Sweat does come in different forms. Thank you so much, Ms. Kumalo.
Thank you so much.
That was Lucretia Kumalo from the IDC, just telling us what her expectations are around how the IDC will be participating in this development of raising up to 2 trillion rand over the next 5 years. The president did announce that an amount of just under 900 billion rand is going to be announced in terms of pledges. We want to, of course, see that those...
You know, South Africans say taxi fee, food prices are increasing, but salaries remain the same.
Now, Lerato Makwala, live to us from the Wondrous Taxi Rank, where, Lerato, I imagine there's great anticipation, perhaps even anxiety from some of those motorists there who somehow are going to have to make it work from midnight.
Well, yes, indeed. We're coming to you live from Wanderers Taxi Rank here in Johannesburg. We're here to engage with the Taxi Industry Association and commuters just to get a sense of how tonight's fuel price increase will affect their daily lives. Well, and we woke up early in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, already engaging with the motorists on the ground. And some of them told us that they're feeling the pressure of the fuel price hike, and the commuters are saying that their salaries are not meeting up with the pressure that they are experiencing. But I just want to engage with one of the commuters here at the Wanderers Taxi Rank just to get a sense of how this will affect them. Just ungitshela ukuthi wena njengomuntu okibele taxi ikaffecta kanjani ma le ndaba ukuthi kuzokhuphuka indaba ipetrol
hantle ho hang tsela yena ya hore ibe dikoloi
ke atla. And you did say hore salary
are thusa.
That we engaged with some of the motorists early in the morning, and they're saying that they are feeling the pressure of the rising fuel price hike. We understand that quite a number of associations have also weighed in on this matter, including the Motor Industry Staff Association, calling on government to urgently implement a temporary fuel levy reduction. But right now, I'm just going to engage with the taxi industry, Ubaba Usabata Mbopo from Santaco Greater Johannesburg Regional, just to give us a sense of how this will affect the taxi industry. Baba, thank you so much for your time. If you could just give us a picture of how this, the fuel price increase will affect the taxi industry.
Good morning to you, Lerato, and the viewers at home. The petrol increase really is affecting the taxi industry. Also, our commuters is really frustrating. And we have seen some other garages taking advantage. As of last week, they were increasing the price. And the price is supposed to be increasing tonight at 12 o'clock midnight. But really, that one is frustrating us, because at the end of the day, these commuters are our bosses. Without them, the taxi cannot move.
And Baba, if you could just talk about the fare adjustments when it comes to prices, taxi fare, transportation fares prices. So if you could talk about that, what does the process practically involve? Does it mean that when the fuel price goes up, transportation fares also goes up? If you could just give us a picture.
Automatically it goes up, but at this point, we as Santaco, Greater Johannesburg Region, we have not yet sat down and discussed about this. We just talked about it last week partially, but now since we have seen that it's digging too much on our pockets, automatically we have to go back to the association. The association must also talk their counterpartners, like your associations versus the commuters. They've got their own organization whereby when they've got a problem, they come together and then discuss about this.
And Baba, lastly, if you could just, what has been done to reduce maybe pressure on both taxi operators and commuters? What has been done?
To the statement of the National, according to our president, Dr. Abner Tsebe, he has made an arrangement that he will be talking to the government so that they can not subsidize, because the subsidy is something that they don't want to, but that there will be a relief that is organizing for the commuters, even for the taxi industry.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you have it, Ayanda. We are here at the Wanderers.
Let's turn to East Africa now. The region's third largest bank by assets, NTBA, reported a 7% rise in net earnings for 2025. That number came in at $180.3 million. At 82.6%, the Kenyan operation accounted for a marginally higher portion of net earnings last year compared to 2024. Interest income fell by 11% in the course of the year to around $463 million as central banks in the region continue to lower interest rates ahead of a switch to a reference rate that tightly links retail credit rates to the policy rate. NTBA very aggressively unwound expensive deposits, lowering its interest expense by over 45%. The bank also raised its provisions for bad debts by over 40% to $56.5 million, even though the bank reported a marginal decline in the stock of non-performing loans and gross NPL ratio in Kenya. 12.4%, in fact, that was lower than the industry average, which stood at 15.5% in January. Now, the bank has an enviable digital credit lending business with the value of loans disbursed over 2025 coming in at $10.7 billion. That was a third higher compared to 2024's figure and much higher than the 3.7% growth in the Kenyan loan book. So what explains that divergence, the difference between those two growth rates? That's why my conversation with John Gashora, the Group Managing Director, started.
So I think first is understanding how the digital loans work. They are short term, very short term. The longest being 30-day loans. The rest are really a few days, a few hours sometimes. And so what we measure is the churn. So when we say 1.4 trillion disbursed, is the churn. But at each point, when you look at the actual balance of loans that is on our books, is fairly small because of the very large churn. In terms of the growth, yes, indeed, our balance sheet did grow, 8% growth in assets, which again, backs the trend that we had seen in the last few years. At 8% growth, I think that is in line with what we are seeing with the private credit growth, which today stands at about 6.4%, at least in our largest market, being Kenya. And so I think we're starting to see that turn around. I think if you look at the performance across our businesses where we have seen growth in loans, that growth really came in the third and fourth quarter of last year. And that trajectory is one that we believe we shall be able to maintain.
There's a big inflation shock that's coming down the pipe, given all the crises that we're seeing in the Gulf at the moment. What was the initial guidance for loan and deposit growth before this crisis hit? And do you think that you can salvage most of it, or at least hit most of those targets, given the inflation crisis we're going to be dealing with in the second and third quarters of the year?
Yeah, well, we don't generally share our targets in terms of loans growth, but I can say we work between 10 and 15%. I still do think that 10 to 15% is not too ambitious a target to meet this year, given that the rates have come down quite significantly from a couple of years ago.
Do you reckon there's the consumer demand for credit and the income, the disposable income available to support that level of credit growth?
If you look at to the market today, it's awash with liquidity. A lot of that liquidity is resting with banks. Which is why, you know, government paper is flying off the shelves. So I do think that that with availability of money, consumer demand will come from planning. And I do think that in the last 6 months or so, businesses have had a chance to plan in a new new interest rate environment, and a more predictable one for that matter. And I do think now we'll start seeing some uptick from the private sector on credit.
How big a compression are you expecting from the transition of the entire loan book to Kesonia, right? The shilling overnight interbank rate, pegging loans essentially to that particular reference rates or CBR. How big a compression in net interest income are you expecting in the course of the year?
At this point, I think when we came into this, we were expecting a fair amount of compression, really simply because we thought, as I said before, that MPC will start with this, will continue with this stance. They have already done 10, they've had 10 meetings where they have had consecutive reduction in the central bank rate. And we're expecting that tempo to continue. However, given what's going on in the Middle East, we do think that there'll be a pause on that loosening. And if that is the case, then the contraction that we were planning in our projections will probably not come through as quickly. I think the second thing I would say is that because of the liquidity that we are seeing, it has been a lot easier, a lot more palatable to plan and to plan on your cost of deposits. And therefore, we could indeed be able to maintain our NIM at a respectable level because we could indeed price our deposits accordingly.
Is Ethiopia still an attractive market at the moment, given the sort of regulations that are being put in place? I mean, if you can't have a majority control of a bank that you might potentially buy as a sort of brownfield acquisition there, is it still an attractive proposition to buy into the Ethiopian market?
Well, we do view Ethiopia as a very attractive market. And I think even when we talked about in last year and before that, I think we're looking at the regulation changing to a point where we'd still not be able to buy a majority. So I think we had become comfortable with that possibility. Obviously, would want to be their only majority, but I do think the pace of regulation to that level would be slow. That said, even that first part of being able to purchase even the minority, I don't think has been really it hasn't passed through parliament as signed into law. So it's still one where it's a look and see to wait until the regulations allow us to get into that market. But the market itself, I do believe, is very, very attractive.
Meanwhile, imported inflation risks in focus.
A double cost shock for a fuel-importing economy. The oil-rand combination is tightening financial conditions again, externally driven but locally felt. Andre Silius, Director and Currency Strategist at Treasury One, joins us now for a look into whether important inflation risks are re-emerging. Andre, thank you so much for your time today. Yeah, how fast things have changed. I mean, we've moved from the rand dollar pair being below 16 around the national budget to above 17 as we speak. Perhaps let's start by putting things into perspective. How do you think the rand has held up amid escalating tensions over in the Middle East?
Good afternoon. I think if I look at how well the rand has held up, then we have to take it back 2 and 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If something like this attack on Iran, had happened 2 or 3 years back, I think emerging markets, especially South Africa, would have taken a much bigger hit. Our economic circumstances, our GDP ratios, our fiscal discipline, all those things was not as good as it is now.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I should be careful speaking about the GDP ratios because they're actually slightly worse.
Mm.
But the person at the helm of things, Mr. Godangwana, has got a tight grip on the fiscal side. The South African Reserve Bank, from a monetary perspective, has got a very tight grip on things. And a couple of years back, our inflation rate was a lot higher, and we had not anchored around the 3% as we are now. You know, so things just looked a lot different. We didn't have a GNU or anything like that.
All right.
So given these circumstances, as it prevails in our markets now, the rand's done actually really well in holding up.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about those local buffers that have been built to sort of protect the local currency. What I've found particularly striking is the resurgence of the US dollar, Andre. After months of weakness, it's now firmly back in favor as the safe haven of choice. What's driving that shift?
One word: oil, and followed by the impact of higher oil prices, higher energy prices on inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wheels start turning. If inflation starts going higher, then interest rates will start going higher. Now, with interest rates that was on its way down rather than up, then gold as such becomes a reasonably well-placed commodity because you are going to earn less interest on your U.S. Treasury bills and your bonds, which means that the low interest or no interest that you're going to get on gold is partially offset by the fact that you would have had a very low income or very low yield on your investments in Treasury bills and bonds. Inflation higher because of interest rates that can then follow immediately leads to bond prices and interest rates, especially in the longer end, moving higher.
Yes.
Which means that people then get out of the possibility of low income bearing things and back into bonds. Hence, the American dollar becomes a safe haven as well again. Coupled that with the impact of higher interest rates, higher inflation on world economic growth, then the rest of commodities also needs to decline because the demand for that will be lower. And then once again, in line with that, gold would also then suffer some of its shine and also come down in prices. Hence, once again, fostering that safe haven area where people move into the US dollar, safe haven, strengthening of the US dollar. It's a complete and utter turnaround of what we 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, we are seeing markets pricing in higher interest rates for longer yet again, Andre. Some analysts, some economists even pricing in rate hikes. How much pressure does that then place on emerging market currencies like the rand, particularly when it comes to capital flows?
See, when it gets to capital flows, the longer this persists, the higher the impact for emerging markets, the more of a movement into safe haven areas. And then, as I say, the impact of that on emerging markets. So this is by any, the slightest of chances, not over as yet.
So then do
and
you
I don't think we've seen the full play out of this whole war.
So do you expect the rand to trend even weaker, right? You're saying it's held up well, but I'm wondering where you're pegging it at if this war were to continue. Well, it is continuing.
So if I look at the rand, and, you know, I must be very careful in how I put this because I'm certainly not hoping that something like that, this will happen. But having seen over the number of years that I'm in the markets, how quickly the rand can react and how quickly things can change. And, you know, so many times they speak about a bubble in stocks. If there's a little bit of a concern in the back of my mind that if this war continues for too long and we see a second round effect on oil prices going even higher, that it could be like a little bubble that burst on the rand and we have a quick second wave of weakening that could be even a little bit more severe than what we've already seen.
Yeah.
So that's something that's in the back of my mind that's of great concern, but definitely a possibility.
Yeah, tough time being a policymaker at the moment, Andre. Let's leave it there. Thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights on the local currencies movements. Now that was Andre Cilius.
And now for some international news, Israeli PM Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu says Iran's war is beyond halfway point.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that more than half of his military aims over Iran have been achieved, but that he doesn't want to put a schedule on the timeline for ending the conflict. Well, the Israeli leader told US media that the attacks by the US in Israel were weakening Iran's leadership by degrading the country's military, missile and nuclear capabilities. Now, his comments follow those by President Trump threatening to, quote, obliterate Iran's energy structure if a deal is not reached shortly. Our Middle East correspondent Yolan Nell is in Jerusalem and has been giving me her analysis of the Israeli Prime Minister's comments.
He looks like he's choosing his words very carefully, not wanting to contradict things that might be said by the U.S. administration. Just yesterday, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said that the war would be finished in weeks and not months. So here, the Israeli Prime Minister speaking to the U.S. cable channel Newsmax, knowing, of course, there is growing domestic opposition in the U.S. to the war in Iran. He said it's definitely beyond the halfway point, but I wouldn't want to put a schedule on it. And then he went on to clarify that he meant that the war was more than halfway in terms of the missions that it had carried out, not necessarily in terms of the timing. And he listed what he said were the goals of the war that were being achieved. When it came to the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, he said thousands of their members had been killed by the joint US and Israeli operations. He said that basically when it comes to the arms industry, they're close to finishing the arms industry in Iran, that they were tackling the ballistic missile sites and wiping out the nuclear program, which has of course been seen as an existential threat by Israel, although Iran said it had only peaceful intentions for its program. The Israeli Prime Minister said that regime change was not necessarily the goal, but he did say that he thought that because of the pressure that was now being put on the Iranian regime, that it was weakening it internally and that it would collapse internally.
And Yolande, you have on one hand those comments from the Israeli Prime Minister saying that he believes half of those war aims have been achieved. At the same time, in southern Lebanon, he's been ordering an expansion of the invasion there.
Yes, on Sunday he ordered this expansion going deep into southern Lebanon, saying that already that Israeli forces had penetrated deep into three areas of the south of Lebanon where they are fighting against the Iran-backed Hezbollah, which came into this war a day after Israel and the US launched their attacks on Tehran. He said really that what they're aiming for there is that they are trying to stop the possibility of a Hezbollah invasion of northern Israel in the same way that Hamas attacked southern Israel on the 7th of October. And also the aim of Israel is to stop what could be sort of anti-tank fire across the border into the north of Israel. But there is a bit of a contradiction in terms of what the military is suggesting its aims are and the aims of the Israeli Prime Minister and Defense Minister, as they've outlined. They're suggesting that they want to hold for a longer period, that's occupation of southern Lebanon. The military have been suggesting it's more of a sort of temporary situation. And there has been, again, overnight, more soldiers who have been killed, four Israeli soldiers killed in close contact with Hezbollah in fighting that's going on in southern Lebanon, a reminder of the costs of this war for Israel as it widens its offensive against Hezbollah. And we've also had three UNIFIL peacekeepers who have been killed in the past couple of days, you know, just showing the dangers of this operation.
Yolande Nell there reporting from Jerusalem. Meanwhile, missile attacks continue across the Gulf. A Kuwaiti oil tanker in the port of Dubai has been hit in an Iranian air attack, sparking a huge fire. Well, the vessel was reportedly en route to China. All 24 crew members are reported to be safe, and the blaze is under control. Our correspondent Lorna Gordon is in Dubai and has been giving us the latest updates following the attack.
That was a drone attack overnight. The authorities here say it occurred just after midnight on a very large oil tanker at anchorage in the waters off of Dubai. As you said, none of the crew on board, the 24-strong crew, were injured in that attack. There were initially concerns of a potential oil spill in the Gulf, but the authorities here say that has been averted. Within the last hour here in Dubai, we've heard a number of explosions, perhaps as many as half a dozen. When that happens, alerts are sent out to the phones of everybody here in the area, warning them to seek shelter and stay inside. The all clear has now been given. The authorities generally say that most of the explosions heard are interceptions, and they said of this last attack that their defense systems were responding to a missile threat. As I said, they say most of the attacks are intercepted, but of course that drone attack on that tanker in the waters off of Dubai is evidence that some of them do get through.
Lorna, you were just mentioning there that people receive alerts on their phones. What do all of this mean for people going about their daily lives. How much of a consideration is it for them?
Well, those alerts tell people to seek shelter and stay inside. For the most part, the alerts appear to come at night time rather than during the day. And certainly if you look around this part of Dubai, to a degree, life is continuing as normal. There is building work continuing. There are people heading out in and out of their offices. The traffic in and out of Dubai Airport is also continuing, albeit at a reduced level compared to normal, but it has picked up since this situation, these attacks started just over a month ago. If evidence was needed of how busy the airport is starting to become, the flight I took in was almost completely full a couple of days ago. So a lot of people still transiting through Dubai Airport, albeit at a much reduced level. And life here is continuing, although people who know the city well say it is far from normal and much quieter than usual.
Our Lorna Gordon there in Dubai. Well,
and with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program, brought to you now by Louis Ashimi, the Omran Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off right after the Onkonana Dengue Show, and the Business Economic segment with David Chiombe kicks off at 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Tuesday afternoon.